The spiritualist's endeavor is to work whole day and night, strenuously, without any stop, simply for Krishna. That is spiritual life. And the materialist means the same endeavor, always trying to satisfy their personal senses. That is the difference, materialistic and spiritual. So, Krishna consciousness movement means that we have to train our senses to satisfy Krishna, that's all. So long in other previous many, many thousands and millions of lives, we have simply tried to satisfy our senses, personal senses. Let this life be dedicated for satisfying Krishna's senses. That is Krishna consciousness. One life. We have several lives. We have tried to satisfy our personal senses. Let this life, at least one life, let me try. What happens? So we are not the loser. Even we feel inconveniences by not satisfying our senses, but we are not the loser. Try simply to satisfy Krishna's senses, then it will be all right. Earn for Krishna, spend for Krishna, think of Krishna, work for Krishna, that is Krishna consciousness. Fight for Krishna, nothing to be rejected, everything to be dovetailed with Krishna, that is Krishna consciousness. Even if you were a sannyasi, you have to work for Krishna. Either you are a sannyasi, or you are a householder, or brahmachari. You have to work for Krishna. But the advantage of sannyasi is that because he has no encumbrances behind, he is detached from family relationship, he has full time service for Krishna. Similarly, brahmachari, one who is not married, simply working under the order of the spiritual master, he also has 100% time to work. So these are the secrets that one has to work for Krishna. Either he is a brahmachari or sannyasi, it doesn't matter, or householder. Otherwise, he'll be captured by Maya. Those who are in the preliminary stage, they should always work for Krishna, always. They must find out, always, some duty. What is there to work now for Krishna consciousness? Karma karana muchate. They should not remain idle for a second. Always find out some duty. That is meditation. How I shall work for Krishna. Araruksyor muner yogam karma karanamuchate yoga rudhasya tasyaiva shama karanamuchate. Bhagavad Gita 6.3. And when one is advanced in perfect stage of that Krishna consciousness, then he may not physically work, but because within himself he's always working for Krishna, karma karanam uchate. So in the beginning, just like small boys and children, they are always 24 hours engaged in the schooling. Otherwise, they'll be spoiled. Similarly, those who are in the preliminary stage of Krishna consciousness, they should always engage themselves in the work. There are varieties of work. Now, those who are actually working with our society, they practically do not find time, any rest. There are so many work that one cannot finish. Day and night, we have got work for Krishna consciousness, and we are happy to execute such work. And the students who are working with us, cooperating, they are also happy. You'll find happiness if you chant Hare Krishna 24 hours, you'll never get tired. You'll never get tired. In any other material things, if you chant or you repeat three times, you'll get tired. It is a practical test. But if you go on chanting Hare Krishna 24 hours, you'll never get tired. So, if you engage yourself in the activity of Krishna consciousness, you'll never get tired. Because you're acting on the spiritual platform. Spiritual platform is absolute. The material platform is different. If you work very hard, then you get tired. So this is, there are the understandings, these are the understandings of spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness. Final. So our Krishna consciousness movement is teaching people that you have no other business than to work for Krishna. That's all. This is Krishna consciousness. This is called Krishna consciousness business. That is called the highest perfection. Srila Prabhupada ki. And now over to Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 16. We'll start with text 22. Where the Kumaras are continuing to offer praise and prayers to Lord Narayan right there at the gates of Vaikuntha, gate number 7. And they're expressing their understanding and appreciation of his supremacy, and by so doing, reversing the elevated position that he has put the brahmanas themselves in and placing him in the supreme position instead, the worshipable, giving benedictions to others position. O Lord, you are the personification of all religion. Therefore, you manifest yourself in 3 millenniums. And thus, you protect this universe, which consists of animate and inanimate beings, by your grace, which is of pure goodness, and is the bestower of all blessings. Kindly drive away the elements of rajas and tamas for the sake of the demigods and twice born. Report by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord is addressed in this verse as Tri Yuga, or one who appears in 3 millenniums, namely Satyadwarpa and Treta Yugas. He is not mentioned as appearing in the 4th millennium or Kali Yuga. It is described in Vedic literature that in Kali Yuga he comes as a Channa avatar, or an incarnation, but he does not appear as a manifest incarnation. In the other yugas, however, the Lord is a manifest incarnation, and therefore he is addressed as Triyuga, or the Lord who appears in 3 yugas. Paragraph. Sridhar Swami describes Triyuga as follows. Yuga means, quote, couple, like two, and Tri means 3. The Lord is manifest as 3 couples by his 6 opulences, or 3 couples of opulences. That's very clever, huh? In that way, he can be addressed as Triyuga. The Lord is the personality of religious principles. In 3 millenniums, religious principles are protected by 3 kinds of spiritual culture. Namely, oh, note takers, get ready, because here's a nice point. three kinds of spiritual culture, namely austerity, cleanliness, and mercy. The Lord is called Triyuga in that way also. In the age of Kali, these three requisites to spiritual culture are almost absent. But the Lord is so kind that in spite of Kali Yuga's being devoid of these three spiritual qualities, he comes and protects the people of this age in his covered incarnation as Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is called covered because although he is Krishna himself, he presents himself as a devotee of Krishna, not directly Krishna. The devotees pray to Lord Chaitanya, therefore, to eliminate their stock of passion and ignorance, the most conspicuous assets of this age. In the Krishna consciousness movement, one cleanses himself of the modes of passion and ignorance by chanting the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, as introduced by Lord Chaitanya. The four Kumaras, paragraph. The four Kumaras were cognizant of their situation in the modes of passion and ignorance because, although in Vaikuntha, they wanted to curse devotees of the Lord. Now we're going to the other side. Before it was, their anger was transcendental, now it's over on this side. Since they were conscious of their own weakness, they prayed to the Lord to remove their still existing passion and ignorance, the three transcendental qualifications. Again, those three, spiritual culture, cleanliness, austerity, and mercy, are the qualifications of the twice-born and the demigods. Those who are not situated in the quality of goodness cannot accept these three principles of spiritual culture for the Krishna consciousness movement. Therefore, there are three sinful activities which are prohibited. I thought there were four. Namely, illicit sex, intoxication, and eating food other than prasad offered to Krishna. These three prohibitions are based on the principles of austerity, cleanliness, and mercy. Devotees are merciful because they spare the poor animals and they are clean because they are free of contamination from unwanted foodstuff and unwanted habits. Austerity is represented by restricted sex life. These principles, indicated by the prayers of the four Kumaras, should be followed by the devotees who are engaged in Krishna consciousness. So there's a whole lot of The first line of the verse, dharmasya te bhagavatas triyuga tribhi svai. So triyuga and then followed by tribhi. So tribhi without, it's a like a pronoun, the three. That's where Prabhupada has taken these three principles of spiritual culture. And you know from your first canto study and study and study and study of first canto, the four principles and their presence establishes certain character, their absence establishes a certain corruption of character. Prabhupada has adjusted them a little bit over here from what you read in the first canto. the brahmanas, they follow these restrictions. Qualified brahmanas follow these restrictions. So say the opposite. Those that are not following these restrictions cannot be properly considered a brahmana. There's our friend the rooster. Cleanliness, austerity, and mercy. Four times he mentions it in the purport, Tribhi. So those who are, the demigods, without explicit mention, the demigods and the brahmanas are cultivating or are situated in, more so than the rest of the living entities in this creation, situated in the quality of goodness. And so they abide by those principles, and members of the Krishna consciousness movement are to abide by those principles also. The one that he's leaving out is gambling, because he mentions in the purport, for the Krishna consciousness movement, therefore, there are three sinful activities which are prohibited, namely illicit sex, intoxication, and eating food other than prasad offered to Krishna. And then, so the relationship between that prohibition and principles that they help establish in one's life, or as he says here, principles, these three prohibitions are based on the principles of austerity, cleanliness, and mercy. Austerity, cleanliness, and mercy. So again, how the absence of these prohibitions lead to the opposite quality. It's described differently. The match up, the connection between the observance, the restriction, the prohibition, and the consequence, or the absence of the prohibition and the consequence of that. It's presented differently here. So I'm not going to do anything more than repeat what Prabhupada is saying here. It's to be understood that in the age of Kali, this is Satya Yuga, it's not Kali Yuga, that where the Kumaras are having this conversation. Even in Satya Yuga, those tendencies, they're there. They're very faint, but they're there. And Kali Yuga, they're not faint, they're very pronounced. And there may be some struggle on this principle or that principle, this restriction, that restriction, this quality of austerity, cleanliness, mercy. The mercy principle. The mercy principle of, as he's saying here, I thought I read it. Not eating food other than the prasad offered to Krishna. So not eating contaminated, unwanted foodstuffs and other unwanted habits. So compassion. The culture of mercy unto others. That is, not just considering my senses and the demands of this looks good, feels good, tastes good, smells good. It doesn't matter what others, how it implicates others. If it feels good, I'm going to do it. To the unrestricted. So the restriction helps to create the quality of caring for others. Compassion, mercy, sensitivity to so my senses are extended in such a way that it's for the consideration of others, the service unto others, ultimately service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what real sense control is. That's the Brahmana Vaishnava. For the Supreme Personality of Godhead's pleasure, anything. Not for the pleasure of the Personality of Godhead, it doesn't happen. Because the basis of my life, Vaishnava Brahmana life, is Krishna's satisfaction. And the sadhana, or the cultivation of that core quality, bhakti, devotion to Krishna, is these restrictions. The restrictions, you understand these things, but restrictions, the four regular principles, help establish the quality of goodness. In the life of someone that's not in goodness, in passion or in ignorance, these are absent. By voluntarily submitting to them, it diminishes passion and ignorance. It elevates the quality of goodness. Regulative principles, Prabhupada called them regulative principles of freedom, which sounds like a contradiction. Restriction, freedom. Freedom, someone might think, means I don't have restriction. And restriction means I'm in jail. Like, you know, I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't go here, I can't go there because I'm in jail. I'm being restricted. But the restriction is not that kind of restriction. It's another kind. It's a restriction from implication in the illusory conception of life, the misuse of free will conception of life. So I'm restricting from sense gratification or selfishness or indulging in that which is harmful for myself. I'm restricting myself from indulging in that which is harmful to myself and to others. That elevates the quality of goodness. In that elevated quality of goodness, it's like in the Bhagavatam example, it's like taking wet wood and making wet wood dry wood. So how do you do that? You take the wet wood and place it near a fire. If you place it in the fire, it'll just make lots of smoke. May even put out the fire. But if you put it near the fire, then the water that's in the wet wood becomes evaporated and it becomes dry wood. And then it can be put in the fire. So the regular principles in our lives helps promote the quality of goodness. So that when we combine with the regular principles, we chant Hare Krishna, it ignites. Chanting Hare Krishna without following regular principles is the wet wood going into the fire. It doesn't ignite. It'll make smoke. Or like lots of billows of water vapor driving the water out of the wet wood. So they're combined, establishing the quality of goodness. So these are the four Kumaras. They're Brahmanas. And they're pointing to the Supreme Lord as saying, you are that person who establishes these brahminical principles and principles that govern the lives of demigods also, or suras, as opposed to the asuras, the devas, as opposed to the asuras, the godly, as opposed to the unholy persons. There are principles that are given by you and by whom those who are elevating themselves in the quality of goodness abide by, to turn their attention to you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you who are the personification of Dharma. Dharmasya te bhagavatas triyuga tribhi svai. So a little bit on this triyuga, because Prabhupada dedicates a whole paragraph to it. As you know, there's a discussion on this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, correct? The discussion is between Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and his brother-in-law. Who's the brother-in-law of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya? Gopinathacharya. And Gopinathacharya is referring, this is just after Lord Chaitanya has come to Puri. He fell in the temple room in ecstasy, became unconscious. The guards were going to toss him out, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, no, no, I'll take him to my home. Brought him to his home. And then, you know, while he was unconscious, he was checking him out to see if he was faking. Right? He took, because he was a learned Brahmin, he took not just cotton, but little fibers of cotton, placed them before the nostrils of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because if he was faking, there would be inhaling, exhaling, which would be shown by the movement of the fibers of cotton. But the fibers of cotton weren't moving. He was stunned. His life airs were in suspension. So you understood he's not faking. This is the real thing. And then when Lord Nityananda and the other associates came in loud kirtan, he came to external consciousness. And some discussion, and Sarvabhauma said, why don't you go see Lord Jagannath, take some prasad. We'll make arrangements for prasad for when you come back. And in Lord Chaitanya's absence, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya wanted to know, who is this? Beautiful personality, sannyasi, so young and divinely handsome. And he explained, he's the son of Jagannath Mishra, Purandara Mishra. Oh, I know. He was very dear. So he appreciated, oh, I know the life story of their family. And then Gopinathacharya referred to Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Lord, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya put his foot down and said, wait a minute. What are you talking about? How can you say he's the Supreme Lord? And the Lord is known as Triyuga, and this is Kali Yuga. He doesn't come in Kali Yuga. So without scriptural reference, how can you say this? And Gopinathacharya gave a slightly different explanation, in that there are something like this. There are Leela avatars in, you know, primary Leela avatars in three ages and not in Kali Yuga, and therefore he's called Triyuga. But he's the Yuga avatar of Kali Yuga. But you don't understand this because you're just a speculator, puffed up scholar. He's in your own home and you don't even recognize the personality of Godhead. But someday, by his mercy, you'll come to understand. And much, much later, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, because you gave that benediction as my brother-in-law, you gave that benediction, by your mercy, now I've come to understand. Anyway, so the way that Triyuga is being used or explained in this purport is a little different. Read it again. There's two explanations. One is Sridhar Swami's. Tri means three and yuga means couple, so three couples. It's Bhagavan who has six opulences. Three couples, three times two. Six, right? So, six opulences. He's Bhagavan. Triyuga. The Lord is called Triyuga, according to Sridhar Swami, because he's the possessor of six opulences in full, Bhagavan. There's another in the purport explanation. He's the Lord of these three principles of spiritual culture, because it comes in the verse immediately after, Triyuga, Tribhi. He's the Lord of these three aspects of spiritual culture. And in Kali Yuga, they're almost absent. Then the third explanation is, he's called Triyuga because in Kali Yuga, he doesn't appear as the Lord, he appears as a devotee of the Lord. Therefore, Triyuga. He presents himself as a devotee of Krishna, not directly Krishna. The devotees pray to Lord Chaitanya, therefore, as the Kumaras are praying to Lord Narayan. They're praying, therefore. Please eliminate the stock of passion and ignorance, the most conspicuous assets of this yuga. How do we do that? What does the Bhagavatam say, first canto say? Chapter 2, first canto, what does it say? How do we free ourselves from the modes of passion and ignorance, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, canto 1, chapter 2? Tadara jastamo bhava kamalobha dayasya cheta etaranadita stitvam sattve prasidati. By the process of hearing the message of transcendence as it's presented in the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, imperceptibly because, you know, we're really attached to the modes of passion and ignorance, so it takes a while. But it's like taking a bath, where the body becomes cleansed by taking a bath. So this is the hearing and chanting is a spiritual bath, where the contaminations of ignorance and passion within this age are cleansed, and goodness Tadara jastamo bhava kama lobha dayasya cheta etaranadva stitvam sattve prasidyati. One becomes situated in the quality of goodness just by hearing. And of course, hearing combined with the following of these four principles and other items, rising early, performing Mangal Arati, taking our morning bath, chanting of our mantra. So all of the things that we do combinedly, that they're helping to eliminate the lower modes of nature. In the purport here, Prabhupada says, by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. We say lots of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna throughout the day, so many. And there, you know, Hare Rama, Hare Rama too. So with the whole mantra. And other sound vibrations that are, they act to cleanse. Because it's the wet wood next to the fire. We're in contact with Vishuddha Sattva, because Purna Shuddho, Nitya Mukto, the holy name is always pure and perpetually in the liberated position. So by contact with the Supreme Pure, we become pure. Gradually. But that's the mission. Become gradually purified. just a little detour, but you've heard the expression Prabhupada used from time to time, that at the time of death, he said there's a Bengali saying, I never really understood what the Bengali words are, but one's sadhana is tested at the time of death. Something, 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 something. The time that one's sadhana is tested at the time of death. Or he then explained that in this way, that a pilot, they get training on the ground. But when you're in the air, you have to fly your own plane. Prabhupada, I had a godbrother who spoke like that over and over. Prabhupada said, you have to fly your own plane. Meaning, you're in the air. So if you have some difficulty and you're in the air, who can save you? You're at the control panel. It's you and God. And similarly, at the time of death, it's you and God. How you've done your sadhana is going to determine what happens at that moment, the moment of death. Fly your own plane. Someone can't, take you back to Godhead. Or, come on, I'll chant for you, or something like that. Certainly that can happen. I'm speaking like that because, it just happened while I was attending our GBC meeting. One disciple who was 62 years old, previously had been a temple president in his vanaprastha stage of life. He had married and had a daughter, and the daughter had become married, and he was an architect, and he finished his job as an architect and became a temple president. He was, a good temple president. And then he got cancer. They had three different operations to remove the cancer. Then he got another kind of cancer that was too virile. They couldn't do anything about it. A type of cancer they can't treat. So he was dwindling and dwindling and dwindling. And arrangements were made. Somebody accompanied him, and he went to Vrindavan Hospice. And there he's lying in Vrindavan Hospice. And I'm in the GBC meeting in Mayapur, thinking I should go to Vrindavan and be with a devotee. So I call the doctor that's giving care to him, and he said, I asked, should I come? He said, well, he's unconscious. 2 days ago he was up and walking around, but now he's unconscious. So I'll get back to you in a day or two and let you know. If he becomes conscious, then it would be nice if you could come. He didn't become conscious. And then at a certain point he became conscious. But the doctor said his vitals are going down. This is it. I mean, I don't know exactly what that means, but going, going, going. So there was, at that point, he was unable to speak. By facial expression, you could understand that he was conscious of what was going on around. There were 25 devotees. They moved him from his hospice room to what they call the going back to Godhead room. It's like the terminal room. That's what they call it in other places. But so it's where devotees could come together in a large number and have kirtan. So the temple president was there, Panchagoda and Govinda from 24-hour kirtan program, singing, and 23 other devotees performing kirtan. And I remember this from another situation where a devotee, I don't recall what his condition was, but the only thing, you could see his eyes move, because he was lying on his back and they had a picture of Radha Govinda and a picture of Prabhupada. And so his eyes could move and he could move his finger. Otherwise, he couldn't move. He couldn't speak anything, do anything. Couldn't, you know, move his body at all. He's just weak. So, you know, we would have kirtan, and his finger was going like this. He was, you know, playing cartels or something, playing the mridanga, just like. So the light was on inside, the body just wasn't functioning. And the body at the time of death, temperature goes up and pain and so on. So where's your consciousness going to be? If it's not, you know, an accident, your car accident and you're gone or something like that, but something like this, how much is the mind going in a calling out mood to Krishna's holy name? One of the devotees that was attending, because Rupa Sanatan was his name, he was unable to chant audibly. So the devotee by his side was chanting audibly. And he could just move his mouth, but he couldn't make the sound come out. Like a little bit, move his mouth. As they were chanting, he was consciously chanting. And, you know, aside from pain, and aside from fear of death, which are universal for one who is embodied, unless you have spiritual consciousness and genuine shelter. So, what's gonna happen when you know death is coming, and the knock is on the door, and on the other side of the door is death? What's gonna happen? So, it's not like we should get morbid and, you know, get into some kind of consciousness like that. But our practice, while strength, sensual strength, physical strength, etc., is there, the taking shelter in Krishna practice should be exercised so that when that moment comes and everything is discombobulated, nothing works, your consciousness is still with Krishna. It takes practice. It's not going to happen just, oh, I'll do it when I get there. It doesn't work like that. One has to practice. So these items of culture are to help us practice. And understanding clearly what our real shelter is. Who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? What are his qualities? And so on, just as the Kumaras are doing. It's to help us take shelter of the worthy object of shelter. Vishaya, from the position of Ashraya, to regard the Personality of Godhead properly. And if we regard the Personality of Godhead properly, naturally there's surrender, assisted by spiritual culture, the dry wood. And then we can ignite. Just one other thing, it's a little on the side, somewhat related. I'm preparing for preparing for a Sri Brahma Samhita seminar I'm going to do towards the end of this year. And in text 3 of Sri Brahma Samhita, there's a description of two types of lila of the Supreme Lord, prakat and aprakat. Prakat is when Krishna appears on his scheduled incarnations like he did 5,000 years ago, or Lord Chaitanya did 500 years ago, and everyone can see. Devotees, non-devotees, demons, atheists, you know, abominable people, elevated people, everyone can see. Prakat. And then there's aprakat, unmanifest. And that unmanifest means things like what Krishna does in Goloka Vrindavan. when it's prakat, what he does in Goloka Vrindavan is manifest here. And when he's not manifest here, it's aprakat. Still going on, but we're not qualified to see. There's a wonderful section of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, just after the Leela of Krishna rescuing his father Nanda Maharaj from the abode of Varuna. And what transpires when Krishna and Balaram come before Varuna is witnessed by Nanda Maharaj, where Varuna gets off his throne and he worships Krishna. And Nanda Maharaj is amazed. Varuna, great demigod, worshiping my son. So he comes back. Krishna takes him back to Vrindavan. And then they have this discussion amongst the elders. You know, who is this boy? So Krishna makes an arrangement where he takes them to the same place where Akura had his vision of the spiritual world. Krishna takes the residents of Vrindavan to the same place, and he shows them Goloka. They're in Gokula on this plane, and he shows them Goloka. The commentators say, specifically, they see the abode of Goloka, but they don't see any people there because they're the same people that are there. And they would get too confused. So it's just they show Goloka. And it doesn't say how they process it. Oh, that's how Krishna is very kind, showing us Goloka. But they drop the whole conversation about who Krishna is. He's showing them some special mercy. So that's the aprakat becoming prakat, or accessing the aprakat lila by disclosure, by revelation. And then in the text 3 of Sri Brahma Samhita, it says that there's a sadhana, that those who are brahmanas do every day, whether they know it or not. It's called mantra upasana. Upasana means worship. Mantropasana, where there are certain mantras. Some of them are directly in Sri Brahma Samhita. That when we greet the deities and sing those verses, they're mantra explicitly. Jiva Goswami says they are mantra upasana verses. That the mantra upasana process is where one, a particular one at a time, one lila of Krishna is entered into by meditation. First you meditate, but then you enter into the pastime by that process. And he compares it to a lake. But lakes often form where there's a river, like, you know, the lake described where Kaliya lived. There's the river Jamuna, and then there's a place where the water of the Jamuna isn't flowing because it's off over here, so it's a lake formed by a river. But once you're in the lake, you can go into the river. And then that river is sva rasaki, according to one's own sva rasa. One can experience the unmanifest pastimes of Krishna continuously, like a river of you're in Krishna's pastimes. Although it's not his scheduled incarnation, he's not performing them in the prakat form, you're accessing the aprakat lila of Krishna. And we do those things. At least we have the process given to us to do those things, to literally today or tomorrow, however long it takes, to enter into Krishna's pastimes today. His unmanifest pastimes, to enter into them. And two of those mantras in our set of Gayatri mantras, they're identified in Sri Brahma Samhita. The point I'm making here is, in relation to this section of the Bhagavatam that we're reading from, there's a means, there's a process, there are things to help qualify us to receive the full fruit of that process, the preliminary things that we follow. But it's not just following them, it's not the behavior itself, it's the consciousness behind the behavior that we're trying to qualify ourselves to be in the presence of Krishna and be in a relationship with Krishna in Krishna's presence and to serve Him. So the things that the Kumaras are saying are to, if one receives that sound vibration properly, they help qualify you to be in Krishna's presence as they are in Narayan's presence and appreciate who He is and in the mood of wishing to serve Him becomes strengthened and submission, and they want to serve Him. They don't want to be served by Him and honored by Him and praised by Him. They want to serve Him, recognizing at the same time that He wants to honor them. So there's the formal way, the Aishvarya Bhav way, where the opulences are very prominent, and there's the Madhurya way, the way of Vrindavan. And the followers of Lord Chaitanya are taken by the hand and taken down that path of the Madhurya feature of Krishna. Even though here in the third canto, we're at the gates of Vaikuntha, we're getting a glimpse of this most wonderful quality of the Supreme Lord, His Bhakta Vatsala quality, that manifests itself in different features according to the mood of the Supreme Lord, who's reciprocating with the mood of His devotee, and we're being brought to that position by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya to enter into the most exalted type of love, the love of the residents of Braja. And we're way down here. But we're getting a lot of mercy to go to that most exalted stage. So stay with the process. Keep your seatbelt fastened. Follow very carefully the regulations, these austerity, mercy, and cleanliness principles, not in and of themselves, but because they're assets to help us become dry wood instead of wet wood. And then when we chant the Hare Krishna mantra and in time chant Gayatri mantra, we're prepared. We're preparing ourselves to enter again into eternal service of Krishna in the spiritual world. That can happen even in this lifetime if we properly apply ourselves. Lots of mercy and very careful practice. That's the gift of Lord Chaitanya. Within the very pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's being unfolded for us if we have the eyes to see. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yes?
Maharaj, even if one leaves his body in Vrindavan and so many devotees chanting around, is it that he has to remember Krishna, follow Krishna?
Yes, he has to.
Sometimes it is said that simply by dying in Vrindavan, one goes back to God.
The rules that apply for Vrijbasis are very special, but to answer your question, there's something from our side too. There's two. Mercy and endeavor. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.